From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 121, recorded live Tuesday, July 8th, 2008. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik, RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott talks to architect Rick Barraza and developer Brian Perfetto about porting a Flash game to Silverlight.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm sitting down today with the authors of Line Rider. Line Rider was a physics internet toy that came out in 2006, and it has recently been ported from Flash to Silverlight 2. Sitting down today with Brian Perfetto from InXile and Rick Barraza from Synergy. Thanks, guys, for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thank you, Scott.
So this was a really popular internet kind of Flash game, and I think that Flash and game are, you know, two words that go together, you know, just like apple pie. I mean, people always say, oh, it's a Flash game. But you have ported it over to Silverlight 2.
That's correct.
Was that because did Microsoft come calling and say, we really want you to move this? Or was there, you know, what was it that was so compelling about Silverlight 2 that you would literally rewrite a popular application like Line Rider from scratch?
Well, I think the main reason was the performance. I know, you know, Silverlight is just bounds and leaps, you know, leaps and bounds faster than Flash is. So performance-wise, with people that make tracks that are thousands and thousands of lines long, we're able to get much better performance. We're also able to do things like the MSN messaging, music downloading and playing while you're making the tracks that you just couldn't do in Flash.
Mm-hmm. Now, that was kind of a throwaway statement, but I think it's pretty powerful. We should back up and talk about that for a second. You said that performance in Silverlight is leaps and bounds over Flash. You are both, Brian, you're a Flash and a Silverlight developer?
This is actually my first Silverlight project that I've done, and I'm not too experienced with Flash, to tell you the truth. But just from seeing the demos that Microsoft came, you know, we had David Chow who came in and showed us the demos of the stuff of what Silverlight can actually do. One of the things that sticks out of my mind is a chess program that he showed us that could do, you know, millions and millions of times, you know, calculations faster and, you know, deeper trees to figure out chess moves than the Flash version of, you know, the same exact code.
Right, and this is because Silverlight was compiled as opposed to being interpreted.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you actually have a real back-end code base. You have the .NET framework and you have C#, as opposed to, you know, ActionScript, which is not as fast, clearly.
I would think, I'd like to insert there, because at Synergy we actually do a lot of Flash and Flex, as well as Silverlight and WPF, and I've spent quite a bit of time, and I come from a Flash background, too. And I'd probably want to qualify that just a little bit, by saying that it's easier to write bad Flash, especially if you're coming from ActionScript 1, ActionScript 2. It's a lot easier for people to start playing in this professional environment when they're really not qualified, if you will, or don't have the training that you find a lot in the Microsoft Developer Center, because the barrier of entry is a bit higher. And so I think, because I've seen and we've written and we've seen and I've experienced very, very powerful Flash games as well. This particular game, because we're doing a lot of relay integration with the physics and just the nature of it and the algorithms, Silverlight was a good fit for this type of problem, in that when you are dealing with these types of complexities and you want to lean on that type of environment, you definitely have a lot more support in the Microsoft developer community, because there are developers who are used to eating these types of algorithms for breakfast, you know, if you will. So they really care about it. Whereas you go to Flash, since it covers such a broad audience and there's so many different types of people developing Flash, you do see a lot of bad Flash. But I did just want to defend that there is actually good Flash out there, very powerful Flash as well. For this particular game, though, Silverlight was a good choice.
I've seen a lot of really amazing, you know, kind of full-screen Flex applications that are doing a lot of pretty pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah.
But I think that your point about this particular application, because Line Writer is an application where people basically paint on the screen. They draw lines, and then they release this little man named Bosch, who rides on a little sled, and he rides these lines. And in the Flash version, you would draw these lines, and it's keeping track of how many lines there are. And once you get over, you know, a couple, several hundred lines, you know, you're starting to do a lot of computationally intensive work, because you have basically a physics engine you wrote in ActionScript. But now, yeah, as I understand it, you've created a complex physics engine that's entirely in managed code in Silverlight, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I wasn't trying to bash, you know, Flash or anything as far as performance goes, but it definitely, having that entire, you know, real programming language backend and having the .NET framework, you know, and like you said, it's compiled, it doesn't, you know, you get so much more,
sure,
you get such a better benefit than you would as if you wrote it in straight ActionScript.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
I do agree with that.
I definitely, when someone sits down and does a show like we're doing right now that is, you know, here is someone who's ported from Flash to Silverlight, don't feel like you have to, you know, apologize, because, you know, Flash is a really good technology. Silverlight's a really good technology. But, you know, there are things that some do better than the others. And I think that, you know, we're going to get letters, we're going to get emails. People say, well, I did this in Flash and it was awesome. And you're full of yourself because you think Silverlight's better. But I wanted to find out what was it about Silverlight in this particular instance that made Line Writer, you know, want to switch over? Because it's a pretty big deal to say, you know, we're going to jump ship and we're going to jump to a different engine. So there were, like you said, there's the physics engine.
Yeah.
And then what are some other features that you really wanted, that you couldn't do in Flash, that you wanted when you moved over to Silverlight?
Well, one of the cool things that you can do in the Silverlight version is it's actually got MSN Messenger integration, which of course is not available in ActionScript or Flash. And what that allows us to do is you can create a track, you can, you know, make the best track you ever made and send it to your friend through MSN Messenger and say, here, look at this track and tell me how awesome it is, or tell me how cool it is. And it just wasn't possible in Flash and ActionScript. So
and these are libraries that Microsoft has on how to integrate Silverlight with,
yeah, exactly. It's part of, I mean, it's a, I think Rick can touch on it a little bit more, because that was more of the synergy part of the development process. But I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, Rick, that that's just part of Silverlight, you know, base code. It's just an API that you can add on to interface with MSN Messenger.
It definitely is one of the advantages. One of the things we're excited about in Silverlight, and one of the reasons why for this project Silverlight was the right choice, is since they're both Microsoft properties, and of course they're designed to work well together, like the Adobe properties will. But if we want MSN Messenger and we wanted it integrated inside of the rich experience, then Silverlight 2 was a very strong choice for that, because that's a lot of the push that's going forward. So we were able to integrate from Silverlight within the game to bring in your Messenger contacts, to sign in directly, to send messages and receive messages, as well as game information. And just as a reminder, this was ported over, and the interface was built in a relatively very short period of time, and that was only possible because of how closely integrated Silverlight and the Messenger and the Live API work together.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that there are, you know, Silverlight's a beta technology, and there are definitely places where Silverlight, you know, falls short. I understand that there are places in Silverlight where the library support isn't there, because you don't have the full base class library underneath you, but that you could potentially pull in different libraries. You could pull in JavaScript. You could pull in, you could talk to HTML. How many times did you have to say, well, we need to stop working in Silverlight and we're going to call out to some JavaScript library and then jump back in?
There was a spot when we were sending information back. Again, since this was a game port and we're building off of a lot of the great work in Exile already had with the Flash game, with the Flash client addressing data pages on the server side, there's certain data interfaces that were required that aren't currently there in Silverlight because it was beta. So there was certain types of encoding that we needed to do through JavaScript But we found the support to be there. The good thing is that these are known issues, so we'd raise them up as we get to them, and we had a lot of very good support from Microsoft and a lot of the community. Jose, who isn't on the call today, but he's down from Australia. He's working closely with Microsoft in Australia, specifically with this Messenger and a lot of these encoding issues, where we're really working on that edge where Silverlight 2 is still in beta. The features are there, but they're not feature complete yet, or they're still getting developed. So we ran into a couple of those on this project, and those were definitely interesting times to be working under such a quick deadline.
Mm-hmm. That was Jose Fajardo from Synergy also that you were referring to.
Yes, yes.
Now, Rick, you did the UI designs. So you did you do this in Blend, or where did you design the overall user interface?
My methodology in Silverlight is similar to how I would do the exact same work in Flash or Flex, where I usually do a lot of my comps in Photoshop. That's more of probably designer mm-hmm. preference when I'm here with the client. So I came up and I met with Brian and David Healy and a lot of the other great guys here at InXile. And we sketched stuff out. We talked about what we wanted the experience to be. I was able to quickly do some static comps in Photoshop because I really wanted to focus on kind of the look at a very blue sky level, what they wanted it to do. Mm-hmm. Once we go from the Photoshop comps, I personally start developing right off the bat with Visual Studio and Blend both open at the same time. I like mm-hmm. writing XAML by hand, so I can block out a lot of things by hand, bring in PNGs when needed as placeholders in Blend, and also Visual Studio. The DPI issue is an issue because of Silverlight mm-hmm. and Windows in general wanting 96 DPI and Photoshop automatically saving for web at 72 DPI. So that caused a bit of a headache from time to time in the process. But that's usually how we go. Once we go from static Photoshop comps, we start building out interactive skeletons with Visual Studio and Blend simultaneously.
Do you know how to make the possible out of the impossible? Well, the .NET ninjas at Telerik do. They just released a huge pack of web controls all built on top of ASP.NET Ajax that'll help you build impossibly fast and interactive applications in no time at all. They've made the impossible possible in desktop development. If you think you can't have a carousel component in WinForms, well, you can. Their Windows Forms suite features a super powerful grid view control and 32 other crazy desktop components that'll give you dazzling WPF-like features, but in WinForms. They do the same thing in reporting solutions with a new design surface like nothing else. Looks just like graph paper, gives you advanced page layout capabilities, makes it feel more like a graphic design software than a reporting solution. Go check them out at Telerik.com and be a .NET ninja. And thanks for listening. Now, how long did it take you to get used to XAML? Because, you know, we had some XAML guys on last week from Conchango, and when they found the limitation of the tool, they immediately dropped down into basically Notepad as well. I'm hearing that over and over, that if you really want to exploit XAML, you need to understand it.
Since I'm very comfortable being a developer, and we've been working with Silverlight from the beginning, and we were in the FISPOP, the regional and national design challenge. So we've been in a lot of situations where we've already need to be living and breathing XAML for quite some time. So when we started the InXile project, I'm kind of already at that point professionally where XAML isn't anything new to me anymore. So I feel very comfortable writing it by hand, working with it in Blend. But usually most of the time just going straight in Visual Studio.
Mm-hmm. And was there anything about Silverlight's that just didn't work? Is there anything that you dislike about it? Because, I've done a couple of Silverlight applications. I think I'm more of a WPF person. And it's a beta technology, but, what's bad about it? Everyone says things that are glowing, but I'm trying to understand. Surely it must fall down in some way.
Brian, do you want to give your impression first?
Yeah, as far as this game was concerned, and I can't speak for other Silverlight experiences, but since this is such a simple game, and it was created basically with the object-oriented mindset in the ActionScript code already in place, porting up to Silverlight, to C# from ActionScript there's really no problem with that. I mean, as far as the Silverlight is concerned, you know, coming from ActionScript, it was really easy. There's no, mm-hmm. there wasn't really anything that I fell down on as far as the game side was concerned. Now, I know maybe we had a few problems like, you know, Rick has already touched on as far as stuff not being, being there because it's the beta version or, you know, not fully implemented.
Like library support, you're saying that something that you needed wasn't available?
Yeah, exactly. But as far as the actual, you know, the straight game code, it was there's really nothing that it didn't do. It was an easy port, and it was porting up from ActionScript, so it was, you know, an easy street, an easy process.
Hmm, okay.
From the user experience side, I think it kind of breaks down into two primary camps, one being a paradigm of what the user experience is and what tools need to do to develop it. And then the other one actually just being the implementation of it, where Silverlight, with the XAML, with the code behind and having that distinction there and having these two different applications open up, Visual Studio and Blend, if you really want to be serious with it, because if you're doing any type of developing in itself, Blend as it currently exists, where it's really just your XAML editor, but then you want to be doing the code, you switch over to Visual Studio 2008, the visualizer inside Visual Studio 2008, I never use it myself. I open straight into XAML and then toggle to Blend when required. But that environment for most user experience people who we can just assume are coming from a Flash world, coming from an Adobe world, if you're doing rich experiences up until last year, of course you were doing it in Flash. Of course you were doing it in Flex. So it was the primary technology. So, but you're used to doing it in one program. You're used to being in Flash where you can design, press one button, and instantly you're in the code environment. So that took a while, several months ago. I made that transition already, and all of us, you know, at Synergy, of course, we made that transition, but that was the first big hurdle to get over in that the approach to it is different. We're not used to having that separated out for us, design in one application, development in another application. We've kind of been used to everything being a little bit more sloppy, but a little bit more mixed together in one primary product. And the other approach, of course, is the difference between time-based animations and frame-based animations, and that's more... again, what have we been used to over the years? So that's another transition, be it right or wrong, you know, whatever side of the debate people fall on, it still needs to be acknowledged that for years and years, most rich experienced architects we've needed to think in terms of frame-based animations and placing things on the timeline that we can control at a frame-by-frame basis. And so switching over to WPF and Silverlight, it does require a mental shift to think in terms of time-based animations.
You know, that's a very, very interesting point. I think that that's kind of one of the fundamental things that's different when moving from Flash. The last time that I worked in Flash, it was called Future Wave. So that dates me pretty considerably. That may have been before Brian was born. And but I remember all the onion skinning, and it was definitely a frame-based animation and having many, many things happening on the screen at once. Now, Brian, you had said this is a simple application, but I drew some line writer lines that were, you know, 400, 500, 600 lines, and it went on for a while. I thought I was pretty clever, and then I went and saw some YouTube videos where people were making some unbelievably complex stuff.
One of the big issues that we still have in the Silverlight version that we're trying, you know, we're working really hard on trying to figure it out, but it doesn't look like there's an easy solution for it. Essentially, the floating point precision, as far, you know, with round off errors and other, the way it's handled and implemented in ActionScript versus Silverlight is just fundamentally different. And it's only slightly different. I know the problem we're running into is literally 12 places past the decimal point are off by one number, and that throws off an entire track. So when you have a feature like we have in the Silverlight version where you can import a track that you've already made in ActionScript and bring it in, the physics act differently, and the writer can crash it at a point that he didn't crash in the Flash version, and your track is just fundamentally different. So it's something that we definitely want to fix because we want people to be able to play the same tracks that they made in Flash, but it's turning out to be a really tough problem.
That's interesting, and that brings up one of the more interesting features, which is what you just said, that you can import existing tracks from the Flash system into Silverlight. Now, how does that work? I mean, where do these tracks live? Is this just a matter of pulling them from the server?
Well, actually, the tracks actually live in the SOL files, which are the saved objects or shared objects from Flash, and we literally pull that in directly to Silverlight, and I actually wasn't the one who did that, so I can't tell you the specifics about it, unfortunately. But I believe we go through Java in some form.
JavaScript.
To get it to Silverlight. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the way it's handled. But yeah, essentially.
Because I know that a shared object in Flash is kind of like a Flash cookie, right? It's
exactly,
Flash's isolated storage. So
exactly.
I would guess you'd need to have a Flash application. You'd have to have a Flash instance, a Silverlight instance, and a JavaScript bridge all working together.
That's exactly how it was done.
Wow. That's hardcore.
It really was. Like Brian was bringing up, when you go into import it, it was also interesting because then you have your domain issues and your security issues between who can open whose shared objects. So if you played the classic version of LineWriter that was written in Flash, and you did have shared objects, Flash shared objects on your local machine, and now you come into the upgraded beta version of LineWriter written in Silverlight. Silverlight actually needs to talk to a Flash importer because it's only the Flash importer that can legally have access to the Flash shared objects, pick it up, translate the information, and then bridge it over through JavaScript. So it was a very interesting procedure there, getting information that's saved in one format locally to just another folder, a couple folders down on your Silverlight shared objects under the new Silverlight data structure that we had. But it was a very interesting, it was a very challenging problem.
It definitely underscores the fact that these two technologies have their own sandboxes, and they really are going out of their way to keep you from messing around in your sandbox. I mean, certainly it may be just right there a couple of folders away on your hard drive, but we can't have them talking to each other.
Exactly.
But it does make me wonder, how much JavaScript did you end up with? Is this 99% Silverlight, or how much JavaScript's in the background there making things happen?
Well, what was interesting specifically on the importer is that there wasn't that much JavaScript at all required at all. If you remember, or anybody who used to work with Flash a couple versions ago, having Flash play nicely with JavaScript across all different browsers was actually quite a challenge. But they've done a lot of improvements over the last several versions where JavaScript can now call in and Flash can register its functions out to JavaScript. Now Silverlight, although it's only on version 2 in beta, from the beginning, they've really been focusing on JavaScript integration. So we have this situation where we had Flash, I believe version 8, of the classic game, and we have Silverlight version 2, but they're both very good at interfacing with very few lines of code to JavaScript in a stable fashion. So we're actually doing a lot of the initiating of stuff from Silverlight. The bridge is basically a very simple handoff, and we're letting all the other work happen in both Flash and in Silverlight. So it's not as much JavaScript as you might think, only because Silverlight and Flash play with JavaScript very well.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely an expectation of plugins now, and now that the JavaScript DOMs have finally kind of coalesced around some agreement amongst the major browsers, that there's a certain expectation of quality and functionality when it comes to JavaScript talking to plugins. Now, this works on a Mac?
It does work on a Mac. I know that the Silverlight is supported on... I don't believe it's supported on PowerPCs. Is that correct, Rick?
Right. It's Intel-based Macs.
Yeah, Intel-based. But it's interesting that, you know, we get a lot of complaints from the people on the forums for, you know, this new Silverlight version that it does run considerably slower on the Mac and even slower than the Flash version. So it's interesting that it's not, you know, the performance doesn't enhance the Mac version where it does.
Have you figured out why that is, or talked to the team?
You know, we had, I think Jose was down at the Microsoft, he's at the camp, Rick, is that correct? Earlier when we brought this issue up, and
yeah,
I think it was just a known issue that it's just not, you know, it doesn't run as great as it does on the PC when it's on the Mac.
Hmm, interesting.
Yeah, and that's not a surprise in the Microsoft or Silverlight community, and it was similar to early versions in Flash only up until recently, I believe with the new ActionScript 3.0 compilers, are we really seeing a lot of increased performance on the Flash experience in browsers in Mac Silverlight is duplicating the same kind of procedural path. I think it just the experience slows down on the Mac for most of these objects inside of browsers on a Mac.
Hmm. So I wonder if that has something to do with the way that Mac deals with plugins or what that is, because it's very interesting. I've got two Macs. I've got a MacBook Pro, which is an Intel-based Mac, and then I've got a small Mac Mini. And I can barely watch full-screen Flash videos on YouTube on my Mac Mini, which is PowerPC-based. I find Flash just brings that thing to its knees. And,
yeah,
of course, because
yeah,
it's PowerPC-based, I can't run Silverlight. But even on my MacBook Pro, if I go out to a terminal and run Top, Safari is just killing itself if I run anything that's Silverlight-based on my very, very fast Intel-based Mac.
Yeah, I have a Mac myself. Since I've been working so much with WPF and Silverlight, though, I dual boot, and I've been booting into Vista so that I can have immediate and access to Visual Studio and all of my Vista development products here. But I notice it the same thing based on which OS I boot into.
Interesting. I'll have to ask the team about that, because I think that would be a very interesting discussion to find out how much code they're sharing and if that is an issue with Silverlight or if it's an issue with the plugin model or how that works. Because I don't know a whole lot about the Mac and how that plugin model operates.
Yeah, it is a challenge we find out in the trenches of building Rhea and making it cross-browser is that benchmark is there, that things drop when you're switching it on the Mac under certain environments, you know, and so we're all trying to figure out how to work around it or fix it.
Now, did you guys have to write any, if I'm on a Mac, do this, else do that kind of code? I spent a lot of time working in Java applets at Nike, and we ended up, we used to call it write once, debug everywhere when using these, you know, these little applets. And we ended up having to go and write code that literally said, you know, if you're on, if you're on Netscape 4, paint this way. Does that exist in Silverlight?
I know from the game side of things, we didn't have any of that. But Rick, maybe you can touch on.
There was an internationalization issue, and again, I wish Jose were here because he's the one who both found it and then addressed it. And I think right after he addressed it, when he addressed it through some code, I believe Silverlight, as it continues to push forward on beta, came out with a fix like the exact same fix like a week later. So it's kind of funny. But there are some internationalization issues that working on a real game, you know, because a lot of us have played with Silverlight and WPF and done demos or done, you know, projects. But Line Rider is a very popular game. It gets hit globally by many, many, many people. So the deployment of this very, very serious exposure Silverlight application online had a lot of issues that you really wouldn't run into in other environments. And one of them has to do with Silverlight and how they handle internationalization or their lack of support as of right now for different keyboard arrangements, for example, and where different keystrokes were causing errors and needing a capture for that. So I think we were one of the most vocal people, and that would be Jose, on the phone conference with Microsoft with the Silverlight team and getting a lot of great support, but kind of saying, you know, hey, these are issues that we're finding, again, right here in the trenches, pushing Silverlight at this level of scope out. We're running into crashes when somebody has a German keyboard layout, you know, for example, or when somebody's doing this or when somebody's doing that. So that's an area where it's still getting fleshed out in the Silverlight beta.
Interesting. Now, from an input perspective, I would think you would need full control over the keys. You would need control over the mouse wheel. Did you end up doing mouse wheel work?
I don't think it's supported. We didn't have any Zoom. I believe it does work in the Flash version, but we didn't. Uh-huh. We actually took it out because we were seeing weird issues with Silverlight when you would actually use the scroll wheel. I don't know if you remember that, this Rick, but the actual hotspots for locations where the mouse over would be off by the amount that you'd scroll down on the page.
That's right.
Actually, you know, I ended up doing mouse wheel work in Silverlight and had a lot of trouble with it, and then ended up doing it all in JavaScript.
Okay.
Rather than trusting Silverlight to do the work, I realized that the browser's job was to be managing a lot of that input, particularly on the mouse wheel side. And since JavaScript has such rich mouse wheel support, When doing a Silverlight Deep Zoom sample recently, we just ended up using a JavaScript event sourcer that would then pass those events down into Silverlight, and that gave me really, really reliable mouse wheel support. And you can get all that sample code now if you look for Deep Zoom and mouse wheel. It's all JavaScript. It works really, really well.
That's interesting. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, it was very interesting. There's so many different things, but even in that mouse wheel support, you have to go and check, are we on Opera? Because Opera passes a different Delta format than if you're on Firefox. So while the browsers have wheel event support for JavaScript now, they haven't agreed on what format, that's going to look like. So you can do that translation inside of the JavaScript. But I bet you could get your JavaScript mouse wheel, back, if you took a look at that. So let me think a couple last questions as we get ready to wrap up the show here. How long did this take you to do? I get the impression it was pretty quick.
Yeah, the initial port of the, not any of the MSN Messenger stuff or the new UX stuff, but just straight port from Flash to Silverlight took about a week. It was very, very short timeline, and that's everything fully functional. And then the rest of the port, I want to say 2 months, Rick?
Yeah, we started around the beginning of May, and we were getting into the debugging of it and really looking at getting it release ready by the middle of June and then getting those bugs out. So, yeah, around four to five weeks of the development of it, or around 3 or 4 weeks of the development of it, and then several weeks finishing up a lot of the issues, getting importing working and stuff like that. So it was pretty aggressive. But one of the things that didn't help, and I guess this was another small technical point, was from beta 2, they deprecated a lot of techniques. So and I'm still amazed at Brian's 1 week port, because it was a substantial amount of code and a challenge. So when we at Synergy came to the table, they had already done an initial port of the actual game core to Silverlight, and based on what had been available at the time. And one of the techniques was still initialized from XAML. So around halfway through, when we started getting the beta 2 bits access to them, the core all of a sudden broke. So that took a couple of days there, because all of a sudden the primary methodology of implementing UI that the core had been taking advantage of, initialized from XAML, was deprecated, and so all of those sections needed to be modified. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Working with beta software, and it's moving under your feet.
Exactly.
It was funny when Rick first came here, and we gave him a drop of the code. The first thing that he said when I came in was that it clearly looked like it had been written in ActionScript, ported to 1.0 Silverlight, and then ported again to 1.1 Silverlight.
Nice.
You can actually see the transitions there.
Well, you can write. You know, they say you can write Fortran in any language, right? You can smell it. Yeah, you can smell your ActionScript if you look through your C#.
Exactly, and coming from that background, you could definitely tell the ActionScript, because I've taught ActionScript to designers and old school ActionScript 1.0, and we're working on a series of tutorials with Microsoft and moving from ActionScript to Silverlight. But there's certain just ways of problem solving and certain things you do. And if you've been programming it for a long time and you're not at a developer level but more of an experienced development level, it gives you a lot of it lets you be very sloppy with your code if you want to. Just everything's a var, everything's an object. You don't need to explicitly do anything. And you can still create these very beautiful things that might not have that same level of data robustness. So when I saw the code, I go, this looked like it originally came from ActionScript, and then it was ported to 1.1. And sure enough, it looked like some of the things would be deprecated for beta 2. But it was interesting working with beta software. It's fun, though. It has that Wild West feeling.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, Rick Barraza, experienced architect at Synergy, and Brian Profeto, developer at InXile. And you can check out LineWriter at linewriter.com. And you want to keep an eye out for the Nintendo DS version coming out this August. Again, guys, thanks so much for sitting down with me here.
Thanks, Scott. Thank you, Scott.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.